Okay, the hymn that we just sang, Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child, is an African-American spiritual from the mid to late 1700s. It is so sad. It speaks about the loss from a child's view of parents, a home, and friends that resulted from being sold away in slavery. A spiritual, especially an African-American spiritual, captures a wound of the spirit so eloquently. They have multi-layer harmonies with long, deep pauses, and many have lone, wild notes. These songs communicated the idea of the soul consumed with anguish and ineffable sadness. Were they just prayerful lamentations or subversive communications? No matter. They ring true of great inner turmoil and despair. This particular song with the words, motherless child, no friend, almost gone, a long way from home, makes me feel as though this person is adrift, with no friends, no family, no tribe or community to help. It is a plaintive call from the spirit of aloneness. Many of us have felt that way sometimes in our lives, and that is what makes this universal. I want to help this singer find their mother, their home, their friends. This song is often taken to be about a slave fleeing the South and following the Underground Railroad north, leaving friends, home, family for freedom. The Underground Railroad was a network of secret routes and safe houses used in the 1800s by black slaves. And they were all these safe houses were linked together by abolitionists and other like-minded groups. Can you imagine how terrifying and desperate that must have been? At every turn, could you trust the people helping you? A beating or worse lay in store for you if you were found, running with just the clothes on your back, leaving everything behind. Both Unitarians and Universalists helped with the Underground Railroad. Many of their homes were stops or way stations on the way north. The former slaves did not necessarily join our churches, but they stopped at a UU home, barn, or business. Even now, there are people who are figuratively all alone, maybe not so desperate, but adrift, on the road, so to speak, alone, without a community. This can be a painful, scary thing, like the freed slave searching for a community, a place to call home. Not finding a group to belong to feels horrible, terrible. Not knowing others of a like mind makes you feel as though you are an alien, a freak, like no one cares, like you are invisible, like you are almost gone. We have an urge, a need to belong, to find our tribe. Abraham Maslow, in 1943, proposed a hierarchy of needs that a healthy person works on satisfying during their lifetimes. His third need that humans crave to satisfy is called love and belonging. Modern psychology has moved away from this developmental approach a lot, and it now goes more to attachment theory. But what is important, I think, is that both theories talk on the need for belonging, and that healthy personal development is defined by attachment and belonging. In his 1958 dissertation, Lawrence Kohlberg wrote what are now known as Kohlberg's stages of moral development. These stages are planes of moral adequacy conceived to explain the development of moral reasoning. Kohlberg's theory holds that moral reasoning, which is the basis for ethical behavior, has six identifiable developmental constructive stages, each more adequate at responding to moral dilemmas than the last. The third stage of the conventional period includes the importance of relationships, social roles, and conventions. The sequence of stages of moral development thus corresponds to a sequence of progressively more inclusive social circles, family, peers, community, etc., within which humans seek to operate competently. So people need groups or tribes. We are social animals. We need a home. We live in communities. It is important for our life to feel good, to be whole. How do we accomplish this? By joining groups. By the time we are adults, we have already selected some communities for ourselves, whether they're around school friends, sports, politics, hobbies, family, or religion. We all have groups, I call them tribes, that we belong to. Some tribes root and support a certain team, like the Hoggets. Some tribes involve service organizations like the VFW and Girl Scouts. Some tribes are political parties. What makes these small communities or tribes coalesce is a like-mindedness around a certain idea. How do you decide which groups to join? We join groups by default sometimes. The parents of our kids' friends, by a sports or work friends. Sometimes by outlook, like political parties, and sometimes by joining a church. Weltanschauung. I love that word. It means world view or world outlook. How you see the world, as in how does the world work for you? Is it dominated by evil forces that the good need to be constantly vigilant of? Is it tending toward enlightenment and utopia? Are the Russians coming? Are aliens going to deliver us from ourselves? Is the rapture near? Not all groups are open to us joining. So how do we find our tribe? Is a group or tribe that is centered around the NFL Cowboys team going to welcome a Redskin fan, especially if that Redskin fan still roots for the Redskins? Probably not. The outlook of the tribe determines if they are welcoming. The values or worldview of the tribe or group either allows for newcomers or visitors, depending on the ability of the newcomers to adjust to the tribe's belief system. So the belief of the group is to hold those unlike in political views as part of the problem with the world. Are they going to be welcomed? Think Palestinians and Jews. If one view of divinity is held up as the only view of divinity possible, does that allow others to join the community or tribe if they don't hold that view? Think of Muslims and Christians. Not all groups are created equal. They're not all alike. Some are very simple with only one purpose, like a fan or a hobby club. But a simple sense of belonging occurs. The focus is just on one thing, where very few moral or ethical challenges arise, and the interpersonal conflicts are relatively easy to solve. Once we move to work, family, service, and some religious organizations, the challenges and rewards are greater. With your work group, there is the aspect of technical abilities, some ethical issues, managerial and interpersonal problems. Religious organizations have all of those, plus the added layer of the spiritual, dealing with the big questions, the purpose of life and death, sin, heaven, divinity, and all which usually revolve around a call to action informed by the answers to these big questions. When my husband and I met, the very first discussion we had about politics, our worldview. We self-selected by what was most important to us. We tested, we argued with each other, in a way to ascertain if it was a good fit. Yet I know people who have friends that they have no idea of their political views. How could that be? I can't fathom that. Because the core of who I am and what I think important about life is encapsulated in my political views. For others, it's not so important. In the wider world, religious affiliation is a far stronger tribe selection. Think Shiites and Sunnis, Hindus and Sikhs, Jews and Palestinians. So why not just join simple groups? Because they only challenge a part of us. Only a very basic need is met. Well, then why not just join several simple groups? But personal development requires increasingly more complicated situations to solve. The stretching of the comfort zone, the exposure to new ideas and feelings, this is what is entailed in personal growth. Professor James Fowler proposed the idea of stages of faith development. He was a developmental psychologist at the Chandler School of Theology. He wrote a book called Stages of Faith, published in 1981. In it, he proposes a stage development of faith or spiritual development through life. He defines faith as an activity of trusting, committing, and relating to the world based on a set of assumptions of how one is related to others and the world. Another interesting thing to note is the correspondence with other ideas of thought on faith development, such as the Hindu chakra system, a metaphysical tradition where certain points in the human body are vortexes of life force or energy related to spiritual development. The second chakra is the Swadhisthana, and it deals with relationships and belonging. I point out all these different areas of thought to highlight the congruent idea around the importance of relationships and belonging to the individual, and also that the lack of these avenues for belonging can impede or imperil the development of healthy, normal behavior, and also might be crucial in the development of spirituality. Not being belonging, being alone, leaves a person bereft, unconnected, outside, alone. So belonging to a more complex group, like a religious group, is more challenging, and both spiritual and personal growth is stimulated by belonging to such a group. Our Unitarian Universalist faith centers around the idea of acceptance and encouragement of spiritual growth in our congregations. We believe in the worth and dignity of every person, not just those in our congregations. We encourage justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Again, not just in our congregations, but for everyone, everywhere. So our worldview is one of compassion and fairness for everyone. Compassion means to have empathy, to try to put yourself in someone else's shoes. Our faith tradition gives you no hard answer for what happens when we die, no hard answer for sin, no universal answer on the existence of the divine. Our spiritual life, codified in the principles and purposes, has many gray areas. In fact, if you're not comfortable with gray areas, you're probably in the wrong church. The gray areas make us synthesize and look for universal and transcendent truths. They help us to see that often questions of theology are hard to answer, and those answers often do not stand up to logic and scientific inquiry. This can be unsettling. So the nature of our Unitarian Universalist Weltanschauung, our worldview, allowed Unitarian Universalists during slavery to be a stopping point for fleeing slaves, a way station. There was a place in our Unitarian Universalist homes and buildings to hide an escaped slave. There was room to take them in, even if it was just for a night. We had time to be a friend, to show compassion, to walk in another's shoes. And the African-American spiritual we just sang, can you feel the pain and suffering of the slave that has lost its mother, that has no home, that feels all alone? His tribe is lost to him. Abolitionists, including Unitarians and Universalists, lived out their values and beliefs. They took action and helped the fleeing slaves who had no or hardly any groups at all to help them. Today, we still do that. We help those adrift. But nowadays, it entails being here for spiritual seekers, people who are searching for their spiritual home. They may stop a while here, and they may move on, but hopefully they are safe with us. It is also our advocacy for the rights of disenfranchised people. The Unitarian Universalist Social Justice Committee works on our behalf to try and thwart the persecution of minorities or people of different beliefs. I think it is a great strength of our faith to be able to do this. Our unique theology gives us an expansive basis to be generous, to hold the uncertainty, the gray area, to be there and not be threatened. We can be a place of respite, a safe port, a way station for those in need. What did we, Unitarian Universalists, gain from our experience helping the Underground Railroad survive? A sense of participation with the ongoing struggle was felt. The ability to live out our moral code by assisting another human, trying to change the discussion and policy of a nation, one freed slave at a time. What do we gain from being a safe haven for spiritual seekers in modern times? By being an open community for seekers, we practice the value of inherent worth and dignity for every person, whether they believe as we do or not. We also get exposure to religious pluralism, and that enriches our understanding of the human condition and expands our vision. But just like the story for all ages, we all add something to the group or tribe. We add a witness to someone's sorrow or joy. We laugh at each other's jokes. We make music together. We worship together. All together, using our combined strengths and abilities, we take action in the greater world through our social justice programs. It is important for us humans to belong. The sense of belonging is part of a healthy human development. And the tribes or groups that we belong to play a vital part in this development. Simple groups only challenge us simply. More complex groups are a greater challenge, and the most complex groups challenge us spiritually. They call us to think, question, and act. Not just in our particular group, but in secular society and even the world at large. Rest with us. Shelter with us. Join us. It does matter what tribes you pick. It does matter if you stay engaged. For the way is often hard. The path is never clear. And the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down, there is another truth. You're not alone.